Today's reading comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 15, verse 1 to 20. Then some Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat." Jesus replied, "And why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and anyone who curses their father and mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, they are not to honor their father and mother with it. Thus, you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites! Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules.'" Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, that is what defiles them." Then the disciples came to him and asked, "Do you know the Pharisees were offended when they heard this?" He replied, "Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be pulled up by the roots. Leave them. They are blind guides. If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit." Verse 15. Peter said, "Explain the parable to us." "Are you still so dull?" Jesus asked them. "Don't you see that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and then out of the body? But the things that come out of a person's mouth come from their heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person, but eating with unwashed hands does not defile them."
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I guess if we were sat here listening to Jane read this Bible passage to us maybe 6 months ago, all that talk of washing of hands might have seemed a bit more distant, a bit more unfamiliar. Whereas now, when we read about the Pharisees' insistence that hands should be washed before eating, well, that seems much closer to home. So much more familiar are we now with hand sanitizer and washing our hands for 20 seconds. But actually, the passage before us today doesn't have so much to do with that sort of hand washing. The concern of the Pharisees here in this passage is more to do with what you might say a spiritual cleanliness rather than a physical one. A spiritual purity, not a biological purity. See, the teachers in this passage, they're not worried so much about hand hygiene as heart hygiene. Let me explain as we begin. You see, the idea of being clean or not being defiled that brings about this whole conversation, that is a very important thing in the Bible. God is very clear again and again in the Bible that he is holy or pure, completely clean from sin. And he's also very clear that if you and I are going to enjoy friendship with him, then we must be holy, pure, completely free from sin as well. When we look at Psalm 24 just a little bit earlier in the service, well, who can stand before the Lord? Well, only he who has clean hands and a pure heart. See, just imagine for a moment you're at home when there's a knock on the door, and stood there on your doorstep is the boy from next door. He's been out playing football with his friends and he is absolutely filthy, covered in mud, head to toe. He's about to come in to have a chat with you when your mum appears and says, "You are not coming in the house like that." "Well, so it is," says God, "with heaven. Unclean folk do not get in." The Pharisees, they understood this. They knew that this was important. So the idea of whether you or I are clean or not was a real biggie. But whereas the Pharisees have a problem with Jesus' followers, what's their problem? Well, they look at Jesus' followers and say, hang on, they're not washing their hands before supper. Actually, Jesus takes their question, but then uses it as an opportunity to teach about two much greater problems. So two headings for us this afternoon. The first one is this: the problem with human religion. We might think that over the past couple of chapters, with all that Jesus has been up to, miraculously healing and feeding people, amazing teaching, that the Pharisees might be keen to find out more about who Jesus is. They've certainly travelled a long way to get to Jesus, about 70 miles. No cars in those days, no trains. And Jesus has been performing these divine miracles, the sort of stuff that only God can do. So surely if you're going to travel that sort of distance, it's because you want to see Jesus do something spectacular. But no, we learn that they've got a problem with Jesus' disciples, his followers. They're not washing their hands. So if it sounds a bit to us like they might have been missing the point, well, you'd be absolutely right in thinking that. Because as Jesus goes on to explain, their focus is in entirely the wrong place. You may have noticed there in verse 3, when Jesus replies, he doesn't actually answer their question. Not immediately. He does get to it a little bit later on, as will we. But Jesus begins by asking a question of his own, and one which he answers for them. And what Jesus wants to point out is that these religious teachers, they've got their priorities all wrong. Their primary concern, it seems, is whether people are keeping their traditions. That's the rules and regulations that they've made up themselves. Now, they weren't necessarily bad things. As we were thinking at the beginning, spiritual cleanness, purity before God, is an important thing. And they so wanted to keep themselves and others clean, they made lots of other rules, stuff that God hadn't said, but lots of other rules so that people couldn't look anything like being unclean. But as Jesus goes on to point out, the problem is that they've made their own religious rules more important than what God has said. And here's the thing, it's not just they say that our traditions are more important than God's rules. Actually, it's that keeping our traditions means that you can ignore or break God's commandments. But as Jesus points out in verse 6, the Pharisees, they're teaching that it's okay to nullify, that is to make void or to cancel out what God said. God may have said this in the fifth commandment, honor your parents, but you don't have to worry about that if you keep our traditions. What Jesus exposes is that they're saying, look, you don't have to honor your parents, that's okay. You don't have to do that, but you do have to keep our rules. So although these Pharisees and teachers of the law, they put on a very good show of being religious teachers, actually Jesus sees straight through it. Now we might look at that now and think, well, it's obvious that they've got their priorities wrong, and how could they possibly think to say that you shouldn't keep what God said in the Ten Commandments? How did they get away with that for so long? But actually, we can maybe see a bit of appeal in that as well, if we think about it. It was certainly happening 700 years before Jesus was on earth. In Isaiah's day, this was a problem. And it was happening in Jesus' day as well, it seems. So we'd be naive to think that it won't hold some sort of attraction or appeal for us today. See, where is that temptation to focus on man-made traditions? Well, if it means that I can avoid doing what God has said, if it means I can avoid doing what God has said because I don't like what God said, or I find it hard to do what God said, and I'd rather do these other things instead, if that makes my life easier, but I still look really religious, well, then we can start to see something of why it might be appealing. When we start to feel that temptation that I'll do other religious stuff, but I'll ignore what God said in the Bible, well, then we're in danger of falling into the same trap. But notice that Jesus makes it very clear that that sort of religion is a real problem. That might surprise us. If you think religion, you might think Jesus. Well, Jesus wants nothing to do with this sort of religion. And he wants us to have nothing to do with this sort of religion as well. And that's because in verse 7 of where it leads. It leads to being hypocritical and false worship. In other words, it doesn't lead you towards God. It leads you away from him. Now, you may know the word for hypocrite that we use today comes from the ancient word for an actor, someone in the theatre, where in order to play the part, they wouldn't put on a whole costume or necessarily a funny voice. They just wear a mask. So you might recognise them as the person who lives next door to you, but when they're on the stage, because they're wearing a mask, they're then in character. They are being someone else. That's not a face mask like we might wear, but it would cover all of us. So you wouldn't actually be able to see the person behind it. So why does Jesus call these Pharisees and teachers of the law hypocrites? Well, it's because they were wearing the mask of wanting to teach people about God and how to get close to God. But that was just a mask, because Jesus says if you look behind the mask, well, their heart's not in it. They say the right thing with their lips, but they've actually got no interest in honouring God. They're only interested in honouring themselves. And the result is really scary. Jesus says that that means your worship and your man-made religion, that's all just a waste of time. You're whistling in the wind. And when we get that, we see why in verse 12, they're pretty offended. Because Jesus says to the religious people of his day, you're wasting your time. But it's even worse than that. In verse 14, he says, you're blind guides. They were supposed to be people who guide people towards God in the right way. Jesus says, you're blind, and you'll fall in a pit, and anyone who follows you will fall in the pit after you. So if they focus on obeying their hand hygiene, well, that will just socially distance them and others from God. Here then is the problem with human religion. It may look good on the outside. It may sound quite impressive. It may even make you feel rather pious on the inside. But according to Jesus, it's just empty words and empty worship. It's hypocritical because it is all just for show and your heart is not really in it. Now, no one likes hypocrisy, do they? But hypocrisy, it's a bit like garlic breath. Do you know what I mean? You can smell it a mile off on someone else, but can be totally oblivious to it personally. Well, I think Jesus' words here are not to lead us to start pointing the finger at others, but we should really begin with self-examination. Is there some area in my life where I am being hypocritical? I do it just for show, maybe even to look good on a Sunday at church. Well, Jesus says that's empty words and empty worship. Now, that doesn't mean it's not frustrating when we see hypocrisy in other people. That can be really frustrating, especially in leadership, whether it's in church leadership, like here in Matthew 15, or in political leadership, we can find that very annoying, or indeed in our parents. Whether you are a child or you remember being a child, very good at spotting hypocrisy in a parent. They tell you to do one thing, but then they do something else themselves. The Apostle Paul says that's a surefire way to exasperate your children. But as Jesus continues, we see that hypocrisy is just a symptom of a much bigger problem. And that's our second heading for this afternoon. The bigger problem of the human heart. Now, when we get down to verse 11, Jesus is answering the question from verse 2. But if you see in verse 10, he's not just speaking to the Pharisees and teachers of the law. He's teaching the crowd and his followers, his disciples as well. Here then is a lesson for all of us. Jesus is keen that they would, how does he put it, listen and understand in verse 10. Well, it's the same for us today, that we would listen and understand the problem of the human heart. Now, we already know that the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, they're placing too much emphasis on their own rules at the expense of what God has said. But it's not just an authority issue, who should we listen to, what should we do? Jesus says it's a heart issue. They have a fundamental misunderstanding in thinking that what they eat or what they touch affects the spiritual cleanness of their heart. So it seems that they're thinking that what you put into your body affects how clean or unclean, how pure or impure your heart is before God. Now remember back to the beginning, we thought about how this is very important. If we are to be in right relationship with God Almighty, our hearts need to be clean. But as Jesus makes very clear, they're not. But this is not because of what goes into our body. This is not because we didn't sanitize our hands before we had our lunch. Actually, they've got their thinking, the wrong way round. Jesus wants them and us to listen and to understand that our hearts are unclean to begin with, because that's what we're like. In other words, that's our nature, not our nurture. You see, in the Bible, when it talks about our heart, that's not just a Valentine's Day, how do I feel today sort of emotion. It's actually the real me. It's what I'm really like. If you describe my heart, you're describing me. Now, Jesus, as we look at that list in verses 18 and 19, he's not saying all these things come out all the time, or that only these things come out of our hearts. He's talking about the origin of these things rather than the frequency. And it's true that we can restrain these actions most of the time. Of course, we all know, don't we, it's much harder when we're tired or upset or angry or fed up or hungry or scared. It's a little bit strange, isn't it? We sometimes use an excuse for our behaviour. We say, I'm sorry, I'm not usually like that, it's just I was upset. Well, Jesus says in these verses, actually, it's at those times we see much more what we are really like. But again, Jesus is not just focusing on only the actions that other people see. What does he begin with? Out of the heart, verse 19, come evil thoughts. And as we were thinking, when it comes to something like hypocrisy, we may be quite good at saying or doing the right thing on the outside, but hiding what's going on, covering up what we're really thinking. So let's be honest a moment about our own hearts. What would it be like to never ever have lied? What would it be like to never ever have nurtured bitterness or angerness? What would it be like never to have gossiped? What would it be like never to have been selfish or greedy or lustful? What would it be like never to have entered into a conversation which our whole purpose was to make ourselves look better than the other people? Even if we do it very politely and very subtly. What would it be like never to feel vindictive or a little jealous when you hear of someone else's success? I can't answer that question. I don't know what it would have been like to have never done those things. Jesus is right. Those things are in my heart. But I can answer why I find it hard to do the right thing. I can answer why it's so difficult to keep good relationships good. I can answer why I sometimes hurt the people I love the most. And I can answer why I don't automatically love my neighbour. It's because I've got a heart problem. It's because Jesus is right. And he wants all of us this afternoon to listen and to understand that it's not the case that our hearts are generally clean and we just need a bit of religion to keep them that way. It's not like polishing a statue on the mantelpiece above the fire. He says that the problem is that our hearts are unclean, and no amount of washing or polishing on the outside can make them clean on the inside. Remember that muddy footballer on your doorstep at the beginning? Well, he can have a wash, can't he? He can clean his hands, he can clean his knees, but he can't clean his heart. Lady Macbeth could not wash the guilt from her hands, and nor can you or I. So I mustn't believe the lie of religion that says, well, if I wash enough, whether that be through rule-keeping or ritual, penance or pilgrimage, charity work or church-going, even getting baptised or taking the Lord's Supper, if I just wash enough, well, I can make myself clean for God. Jesus said that doesn't work. That's why Jesus uses such strong language. There's no getting away from it. Jesus is not messing about. So often we look at Jesus and we think, oh, he's just beautiful. The tender word, the compassion he shows, the love he shows for people. Then we come to someone like this and think, wow, Jesus is really strong. But he is being very strong in his language because he wants everyone to understand in no uncertain terms that external washing, man-made religion, does not make or keep you clean. It simply can't do that. And it is so important we understand the problem, because only then can we understand the solution. And the solution is not a different set of rules or a different religion. The solution is not mindfulness or meditation, and it's certainly not more washing. The solution is not superficial, it is supernatural. The solution is to turn to God for help. Now, why would we do that? Why should I not rely on myself or someone else? Why should I rely on God? Well, because there's a wonderful promise of God back in Ezekiel chapter 36, where God says, I will give you a new heart. God promises a new heart, a clean heart. Not something we earn, but something that he gives to us. How does that happen? Well, this supernatural heart surgery, it doesn't take place in an operating theatre at the Royal Barracks Hospital. It took place on a cross on a hill outside Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. It's at the cross that Jesus takes our unclean heart and the separation, the isolation from God that we deserve, and washes it to be clean like his heart, his pure heart, his free from sin heart, so that you can enjoy that perfect relationship, so that you and I can stand before the Lord with clean hands and a pure heart. This passage is a tricky passage, but the wonderful news that sits behind it is that when Jesus exposes our inner uncleanness, when he puts his finger on our hypocrisy, as he does in this chapter, it's done with great love and with great purpose, so that we may acknowledge it, recognise it, see it for what it is, but then turn to him for complete forgiveness. Jesus doesn't just diagnose the problem at the cross. He also provides